A Dunedin medieval and Renaissance society, aka the Rare Birds, is about to mark a decade of making music and puppet shows that hark back to those amazing times. Period instruments and costumes are always part of the mix, and for the 10th anniversary puppet show, The Tale of Tales, they're presenting an adaptation of a 17th century Italian collection of fairy tales performed to music. Jonathan Keough is a founder member of the Rare Birds, a true Renaissance man, and he rattles off the period instruments they play.
Okay, so we have a spinet, which is a portable version of the harpsichord. We've got a bass viol, which is an ancestor of the cello, plenty of recorders, and a nickel harpa, which is a really interesting Swedish historical instrument, which is partly bowed like a violin, but also has keys on it like a hurdy-gurdy.
Goodness me, and a Rauschpfeife,
yes.
Rauschpfeife, I was so close.
Yeah. It means noise pipe in German, and it's extremely loud, early reed instrument.
We're celebrating with you 10 years, not only of the Society of the Rare Birds, but also of puppet shows.
Very early on, we experimented with puppet shows, and we set Marlowe's Dr. Faustus as a puppet show, just as a sort of experiment, really, to see how we liked it and how audiences would like it. And I learned from that, number one, puppet shows are enormous fun to do, and secondly, that audiences really respond, and you also get a very varied audience for puppet shows. So we felt that it was a really good way to present early music to a much broader audience than would otherwise come along to a classical concert, for example. And that's really why we've continued to present early music through that medium of the puppet show right throughout our history.
What role did the puppet shows have in medieval Renaissance society?
I guess they're a kind of an interesting sort of low tradition or popular tradition. So I guess this, similar to us, they were a form of popular entertainment, not very high status, but well-liked and sort of ever-present, really, right throughout those periods. And it's really interesting to look at the way high forms of literature intersect with the puppet tradition over hundreds of years. So you get stories like the Faustus story, which sometimes appears in sort of formal drama like Marlowe, and then will sort of disappear back into the puppet tradition and be passed on that way until somebody else picks it up like Goethe many centuries later and does another high literary play on the subject. So I think the puppet tradition has always been a very vital and integral part of that cultural tradition.
Well, I see. I mean, shadow puppetry, of course, that goes back a very long way. Glove puppets, I would have thought, would have been quite natural at the time. No marionettes. But you've also got giant puppets.
Yes, we do.
How giant is giant?
Well, I suppose about 7 or 8 feet tall.
Oh, yeah, that qualifies.
Our biggest ones, if it's a troll or something like that.
That totally qualifies.
Yes, it does, yeah.
So for your 10th anniversary, you are producing The Tale of Tales, and this uses glove, shadow and giant puppets. But the stories within here sound really interesting, including the original version of Cinderella.
Yes, that's right. So this is an early 17th century collection of fairy tales, written by an author, Giambattista Basile, in Naples. And it's really the first European collection of fairy tales, so the first time that somebody really gathered all of these stories and put them together in one accessible literary source. And there's 50 stories in this collection, so it's huge. And it's a really interesting mix of high literary artifice and a lot of very broad humour, a lot of idioms and folk sayings and sort of peasant humour mixed in with the courtly wit and learning. So it's a fascinating collection.
The original version of Cinderella I mentioned, how different is it to the, I'm sure it's very different to the Disney version, but perhaps to the more traditional Cinderella story we might know?
Well, I think these stories are pretty recognisable in their basics, in the sense that there's a young girl who is pushed to the lower rungs of the household by a stepmother and stepsisters, and who eventually sort of finds her true love almost by accident. But often the sort of minor details which take on iconic status through things like the Disney films, like the glass slipper. In this story, it's like a wooden platform shoe that Italian noble ladies used to wear to keep their dresses clear of the filth on the streets. And there are 6 stepsisters instead of 2 or 3, So it's often the minor details that are quite different in these stories, but the structure of the story tends to be quite recognisable.
Are they grim? Are they grim, grim, along the lines of the grim kind of attitude towards fairy tales?
Yes, they are. They can be very bloodthirsty. The humour can be quite, well, I said broad before, but scatological would be a better description. And obviously we're toning some of that down for this show. But it does say something about the sensibility of the period, I suppose, that you know they were a lot closer to the physical realities of life than we are, and that's reflected in the literature.
I have Punch and Judy, of course, going through my head as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, are there Punch and Judy elements to this in terms of that kind of violence that goes back to
the
time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So there is domestic violence. There are characters having terrible entanglements with the law. There are executions and sort of terrible bloody ends and all of those sorts of things which appear in the Punch and Judy tradition as well.
Crikey, that's going to be an intense 40 minutes, isn't it?
Well, as I said, we have toned it down. It is family entertainment, so yes. But I have found that the odd beheading in a puppet show does tend to go down quite well.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, dear. The physicality of puppet shows, I always thought that was actually incredibly demanding, whether you're in a giant puppet costume or whether you've got your hands up for some time as a glove puppet or manipulation with shadow puppetry. I mean, how physical is it and what sort of training and practice do you all have to do?
It is quite physical, but I wouldn't say that it's inordinately more difficult than appearing on stage as an actor and the sort of physical requirements that all actors have to deal with. And there are ways of making it a little bit easier. So, for instance, you mentioned that you've got to have your arm up for long periods of time when you're using glove puppets. But there are ways of setting up the puppet booth so that you can sort of rest your forearm now and again to sort of take the pressure off it. I guess the main challenge is managing all the different objects while still keeping track of the story and saying your lines in the right place. So it's a bit of a sort of logistical juggling act sometimes.
So you've got the puppets, you've got the props,
yes,
and you've got the words that you're trying, yes, to sync with the movement of the fingers.
Yeah, that's right.
Sounds easy. Multi-skilling. Mm. How many of you are there doing the puppetry?
We will have 4 people doing the puppetry for this show.
And you've got the music as well. So the music is telling part of the story also, yeah?
Absolutely, yes. Yep. So we've got a group of, I think we're up to about 12 musicians, an instrumental ensemble and a chorus.
Period costumes, that's a big part of the Rare Birds also, isn't it?
It is.
What's your favourite? What's your go-to period costume?
Our go-to is Renaissance, and I guess that's the period where we feel most comfortable musically as well. We've been very lucky in our group to have a professional costumier join the group quite early on, with many years of experience in making costumes for theatre and other sort of performance settings. And she's really been instrumental in producing authentic, wearable costumes for us to perform in. And we do find that that makes a surprisingly big difference. The clothes of that period are constructed very differently from our clothes. They make you stand differently. They make you move differently. And putting on that costume does help, I think, to get us back into the mindset of the music that we're playing or the stories we're telling.
You kindly sent us a photograph of you in period costume in performance, but I might get you to describe the outfit.
There's hose, there are sort of breeches that button at the knee, and then a doublet, which is quite constraining, I suppose, compared with the sort of more fluid clothes that we wear, with sort of 17 or 18 buttons that get done up the front, and a very tight high collar, and quite tight at the wrists as well. So, you know, you feel quite contained by the clothes. There's a sort of formality about wearing them that makes for an interesting mood when you're playing or performing.
Do you enjoy it, though? Does it actually feel quite
cool? I love
cool?
it, yeah. It's always uncomfortable for about the first 5 minutes, and then as soon as I've got that outfit on, I don't want to take it off again, so you get used to it very quickly.
You've had a very busy few years, the Rare Birds. You've had performances in Dunedin, gone to Invercargill, gone overseas, in fact, to Australia, to the Abbey Medieval Festival outside Brisbane. You've won some awards for Bookworm, your puppet show. So it's,
yes,
been full on for you, really. What's your next big project after this anniversary show?
Our next big project is a production of T.S. Eliot's Murder in the Cathedral, which is a verse drama written early 20th century but set in the medieval period. And we're performing that in St. Paul's Cathedral in Dunedin, with period music and masks and, you know, the usual sort of creative forces that we bring to a production, we'll be bringing to that play as well.
Well, when's that, Jonathan?
That is late November and early December.
Jonathan Kayoff, a puppet opera, The Tale of Tales, plays on Saturday at the Dunedin Art Gallery.